Well, I come to you this Friday morning almost providentially, as our reading today was Mark chapter 15, which tells us of that awful yet good Friday almost 2,000 years ago when Christ went to the cross for sinners. And so we know that Jesus has been betrayed by Judas at this point. His disciples have abandoned him and fled. Peter has denied him three times. He has been brought before the chief priest and the council. And now, as it comes to the morning, Friday morning, the council prepares to take him before Pilate. And that's exactly how Mark 15 opens. As the chief priest, the councils, they hold a consultation. They bind Jesus and they lead him away and they bring him to Pontius Pilate. Pilate was a Roman governor of Judea from basically AD 26 to AD 36. And as the magistrate, only he had the legal right to pronounce a capital sentence. That is an execution. And we're told here, the narrative is very concise here in Mark's account. But Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says, "You have said so." In other words, absolutely, I am the king. Now we know from other gospel accounts that gets expounded on a little bit, but for Mark this is clear, right? Jesus is not in any way denying his kingship, though he will explain his kingship further. And so Pilate asks again, right, "Have you and no answer to make? See how many charges are brought against you?" And Jesus remains silent, like a sheep led to the slaughter. Isaiah 53 being unfolded. And this is remarkable for Pilate because silence in many ways was a sign of consent. From there, Pilate ultimately delivers Jesus to be crucified. But he does so in a very interesting way. At the feast, it was common for him to release a prisoner back to the people, whoever they asked. And so one of them, he ends up picking the worst prisoner possible, right? He picks this insurrectionist, a murderer named Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he's saying, "Well, do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" That is Jesus. "For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priest had delivered him up." Bingo. It was out of envy that the chief priest had delivered him. Even Pilate could see ultimately what these people were really for. The chief priest hated Jesus because he undermined their status and their authority with his teaching and with his power. And Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with the man you call the king of the Jews?" And they cried out again, "Crucify him." Well, that's extremely harsh. Crucifixion actually has its origin in the Persian Empire, but it was adopted by the Romans, a very cruel and shameful form of capital punishment. We cannot grasp the level of cruelty and shame that existed in crucifixion. It was meant to be as absolutely degrading as possible. And Pilate is even shocked by this. What evil has this man done that he should be crucified, right? I mean, this is metal spikes driven through wrist and hands, a spike driven through the heel of a victim, death usually resulting over the course of days from the effects of injuries, hunger, dehydration, sun exposure. The condemned's legs often had to be broken at the end, which would keep them from lifting up their body in order to breathe. And so they would ultimately have their legs broken, and then they would just die from asphyxia, not being able to breathe, slowly dying. And this is, I mean, just horrific death. And even Pilate is shocked by it. And so he says, "Hey, you know, who do you want? Do you want Barabbas or this Jesus?" Right? He's thinking, surely this guy's not done anything as bad as this other dude. And what does the crowd cry out? They cry out for Barabbas. They desire the murderer over the Messiah. And we'll come back to that. That's so significant that Jesus steps in the place of Barabbas, who would have been crucified as a political enemy of Rome, as an insurrectionist. Then we start seeing the account of the suffering begin. As Jesus is led away by soldiers, begin to mock him as the king of the Jews. They put a purple cloak on him, which was a clothing for royalty. They twisted together a crown of thorns and they put it on him. Now that's significant. Why is a crown of thorns significant? And the answer is what came forth out of the ground when the curse came because of Adam and Eve's falling in sin? And the answer is thorns. What you're seeing as thorns are placed on his head is that symbolic picture. Like I said, these men don't know they're doing this. They're just being evil. But God is working through the evil acts of these men in a very powerful way, demonstrating that Christ is bearing the curse. And that's why crucifixion was necessary. As Deuteronomy 21 had said, right? For anyone who hangs upon a tree is cursed. And Jesus becomes cursed for our sake. And they begin to mock him as kneeling down to him, all of this. And then they lead him out to crucifixion. We are told how they grabbed a passerby, a man named Simon of Cyrene, to help carry Jesus' cross. Now, Mark gives us a little note about the father of Alexander and Rufus, and that's interesting because that seems like a totally aside note. However, it's very likely that these individuals, they would have been members of the Christian community later on, probably at Rome. Mark would have known them when he is most likely writing this gospel account. Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry the cross up to Golgotha, which means place of the skull. Here, Simon is actually becoming a visual image of the true discipleship that Jesus demands, one who bears his cross. And so they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he refuses to take it, right? This is important because this was not just them being mean. Wine mixed with myrrh actually was a primitive form of painkiller. Jesus refuses any relief. He bears it all. And they crucified him and divided his garments among, casting lots. All of this is being fulfillments of prophecy. Psalm 22, which is incredible because when Jesus says, my God, why have thou forsaken me, right? That's pointing back to Psalm 22. And all of that is so important because that psalm of the suffering servant of God ends in victory. So though it sounds as if Jesus is like, God, what are you doing to me? No, Jesus is singing the psalm, probably not only as a declaration to the crowd, but a comfort to his humanity, which is being crushed in that moment as a symbolic picture that this will end in victory, not loss. And so he is crucified between two thieves, we are told. We don't get that interaction where one of them ultimately turns to him. We find that in the other gospel accounts. Here we are just told early on of how they were also those who continue to mock him. The chief priests are there mocking him. He cannot save himself, though he supposedly saved others. If he is the Messiah, right, let him come down from the cross that we may see and believe. The truth is, no, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. And he had to go to the cross for salvation to truly happen. He had to be killed in order for others to have life. This is just a terrible picture of Christ being surrounded by mocking and reviling, and yet he does not revile in return. And then we go on to see the death of Jesus. And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. We see from other texts that he declares it is finished. And at the moment of his last breath, the curtain of the temple is torn in two from top to bottom. This is so important. The death of Jesus is the final and definitive sacrifice for sin. No longer would the high priest need to enter into the most holy place behind the veil to atone for the sins of people. Jesus is the new and eternal high priest, and also the perfect sacrificial victim who obtains for his people eternal redemption. And so the tearing of the veil is a picture of the reconciliation between God and man through Jesus Christ. And I love how verse 39 closes. And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, truly this man was the Son of God, not out of the mouth of chief priest, but out of the mouth of a centurion. truly this man was the Son of God. This is the culmination of Mark's gospel account. Jesus is the Son of God, and a Roman centurion declares it as he stands at the foot of the cross, beholding the crucified Messiah. We are told how the women were looking from a distance, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the younger, and Joseph, Salome. When he was in Galilee, they followed him and ministered to him. And then we see how Jesus is buried. In order to keep from working on the Sabbath, Joseph of Arimathea, a rich man, a follower of Jesus, ultimately gives his tomb to Jesus, and he goes to Pontius Pilate and he asks for the body. Pilate is shocked that Jesus is already dead, because like I said, this is a process that would at times take several days, and that's because Jesus gave up his life. And so Joseph is granted the authority to have his body, which once again is a fulfillment of Isaiah 53, that he would be buried in a rich man's tomb. And so they go, they wrap him in a shroud, and they put him inside the tomb, and the stone is rolled against it, and the Marys remember and see where he was buried. And that's going to carry us over into Mark 16. What a terrible account of the passion of Christ. And yet, it is the most wonderful picture thus far in the book, because without this picture, there is no salvation. You see, you and I are Barabbas, the insurrectionist against God, who deserve a death of shame, a death of absolute brutality, and yet Christ bears it for you and I. Christ is our perfect substitute, who takes our place, bearing our curse. He became a curse for us that we might become the righteousness of God in and through him. And so I ask you today, like the centurion, what do you see when you stand at the foot of the cross? Can you see beyond the suffering to salvation? Do you see just another man who is a victim of circumstance, or the sin-bearing Savior who conquered death for us? The centurion saw that Jesus died victorious. Death didn't conquer Jesus. He conquered death. Oh, what a Savior. Isn't he wonderful?